Move to administrative docket number 504. Administrative docket 504 is a petition filed jointly by myself and Justice Pickering, which would, or proposes to consider repealing Supreme Court Rule 123 and enact amendments to Nevada Rules of Appellate Procedure 36 to allow, in certain circumstances, the citation to unpublished dispositions beginning on or after the adoption of the amendment of the rule. I will first ask Justice Pickering if she has any other additional comments. I would make a record of the fact that the court has received numerous letters from practitioners throughout the state, together with two extensive views expressed by, or divergent views expressed by, the members of the appellate section of the state bar, which were very thoughtful and informative. I think I speak for all of my colleagues in expressing our sincere appreciation to that section for their thorough and thoughtful approach and information. As those may wish to speak here, I would simply urge that you not be repetitive of positions that have already been written, that you try to avoid duplicating what others have spoken to, and that you limit your remarks, if possible, to 3 minutes. Justice Pickering, anything further that you would like to add by way of introduction to the petition?
No, not at all, except for to join in the Chief's thanks to all of you who wrote or commented on this. It's an important issue, and we really appreciate the public input, as well as the input from the appellate practice section of the state bar. And I think all of us are the better for that education. But I think the point today is to hear from the practitioners who would be most directly affected by this rule change were it to be adopted. So I say let's go ahead with the hearing.
Okay. Let's begin then. If there are any persons in Carson City who wish to address this particular administrative docket, come forward, and then we'll move to Las Vegas.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Stephen Silva here on behalf of the Appellate Litigation Section of the State Bar of Nevada. In light of Mr. Chief Justice's comments concerning our commentary, we respectfully submit the matter, and I stand here to answer any questions that this court has concerning our two position papers.
I don't think so. I think we're pretty well versed in the papers. I will tell you that we have staff who are looking at some of the questions and issues that his section raised, as additional research that we are interested in.
Thank you for your consideration, Your Honors. We submit.
Okay, great. Any other persons? Yes, Mr. Eisenberg?
Thank you, Your Honor. Robert Eisenberg. I didn't plan to talk today. I was just going to come down and listen. But this morning I did a little research project on Westlaw for trying to find some Nevada cases. About 20 hits for cases came up. Five of them were published opinions, 15 were unpublished. And it dawned on me that I read the published ones, but not the unpublished ones. If I had had to read all 15 unpublished ones, it would have significantly increased the amount of time I spent researching that project. I don't know if that's going to carry over for all projects. And frankly, I don't really have a strong feeling one way or another about this change. It's just something that happened this morning. And the other concern that I just wanted to express, we spent a lot of time and effort getting the Court of Appeals passed so that it would lighten this court's caseload and give you more time on your cases. If you spend more time on unpublished opinions, which I think you probably would because you realize they're going to be under the microscope a little more than they have been in the past, then I think only you can really estimate how much more time you'll spend on those cases and how much time it'll take away from your other cases. So those are really the only comments I had. Thank you.
I think that's a very valid concern, Mr. Eisenberg, and one that has weighed on all of us, no question.
Let me just ask Mr. Eisenberg a question. I'd ask you to put your former staff attorney hat on. How do you think it would affect our staff if we do this, aside from having to spend more time on artists? But what about the research process? Do you think it would be the same thing with them as to when they prepare a memorandum for us as to how they would view the published opinions versus the unpublished orders?
With your staff?
Yes.
It's been 30 years since I was on the staff.
I trust your opinion.
I don't know how it works now. But assuming that a lot of the unpublished opinions are written by staff, if I were a staff attorney and I knew that an unpublished decision that I'm writing for the justices could be cited, I would spend more time on it. I think it's just human nature. But the real question is how much more time, and is that enough of a factor to vote against the rule change? I just don't know that. So.
Thank you for your help.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other persons in Carson City who would like to address this administrative docket? All right. Seeing none, Justice Pickering, I assume no one in Las Vegas has any input. Is that right?
Mr. Bandino? Bandino? I'm sorry.
B-L-A-N-D-I-N-O.
Bandino, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, Kim Blandino again. I'd like to say that I'm in full, wholehearted support of this particular rule change. I did read the comments that I saw posted on the web against it. And to speak to those, they seem to be a complaint as to whether an unpublished decision not having the right factual context that could be misleading and maybe lead the court in the wrong direction on a particular issue. But then, again, I'm going to point to what I referred to in my previous comments as to the rule change as to pro se appeals, civil and the criminal end, is that there's some issues that really doesn't matter what the factual context is, and that writ of mandamus that I referred to, Judge Ritchie recused himself. That he already appeared on my case, but there was a lull time in between reassignment. The case came back to him, and he just heard some courthouse gossip about me, which has happened throughout the years. I had a judge that recused himself because he made opinion because somebody commented about me at a party, and that was Judge Voy in the family court case, so he was recused. There was peremptory challenges and things, so Judge Ritchie was my last one, and he heard courthouse gossip, and he thought it would have the appearance of impropriety. And this court properly ruled that that was not the appropriate grounds on which to recuse himself from the case that he was assigned to, then off, and then now reassigned back to him. And this court issued the mandamus and said that's not appropriate grounds. So it doesn't matter about the factual context. Perhaps if Judge Ritchie had recused and I had that ruling, maybe about another judge or some other party, they could have, on a motion for reconsideration or rehearing, said, look, the appearance of impropriety is not the proper grounds to recuse from a case, and that could have been persuasive for him. The factual context, it didn't matter. I say that this rule change is long overdue with the Internet and the vastness of things. Sure, there's going to be some, I appreciate what the previous attorney said, that there might be some more work involved. However, in looked at the benefit of the rule change, I think it far outweighs the time that it might involve in extra work by you. I'm going to cite one other point that I'd seen in a criminal context. There was an unpublished order by the perennial litigator, Curtis Downing. You know him. He's got tens of cases there before you and closed on the Internet. But he went for habeas relief while his direct appeal was still pending. And the judge dismissed it and said, your direct appeal is still pending. And there was just a written order that said, there's nothing in the rules that says we can't hear your post-conviction or habeas petition, even though the direct appeal is still pending. Now, that's something that really should have been published, in my opinion, because of the beneficial effect it could have in getting somebody that was wrongfully incarcerated out of custody, because there's a possibility that the ineffective counsel issue could have been resolved prior to the direct appeal even being heard. And at that particular time, the delay between the direct appeal being docketed and heard was somewhere around 2.5 or 3 years when we had that big crunch, and the court wasn't divided. It was not divided 3-judge panels. And so I'm in full support of the rule change and allowing unpublished decisions to be considered.
Thank you very much for your input.
Any other persons in Las Vegas who'd like to speak on this issue?
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Carson City, Justice Pickering. Good afternoon, Dennis Kennedy from the firm of Bailey Kennedy, speaking on behalf of myself and the firm. Also with me today are from my office, Sarah Harmon, one of my partners, and Paul Williams, both of whom did a good deal of work on our written submission. My point is a simple one. We, of course, support ADKT 0504, and we urge that the court not make it prospective only. What we did in our submission, because we think, in fact we know, that there are a number of unpublished opinions out there that make a substantial contribution to Nevada jurisprudence. And they are opinions. We gave you 4 examples because we're not just talking hypothetically. Those 4 examples are cases which we believe to be the only cases in Nevada on those particular points. I won't discuss each of the cases. They're discussed in our written materials. But we think it's important that if the court is going to permit citation to unpublished opinions and orders, that it not do so prospectively only. There's a lot of valuable jurisprudence out there that this court has produced over the years, which we rely on in our own work and advice to clients, even though it can't be cited. And we would ask that the court approve ADKT 0504 and approve it with respect to all unpublished orders, not just prospectively only.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Kennedy?
Has no questions?
Not in Carson City, Mr. Kennedy. Any questions, Justice Pickering?
No, I have none. Thank you, and thank you for your written submission as well.
All right, thank you.
Does anyone else have comments? Mr. Shapiro.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I submitted a letter in favor of the rule, so I'm not going to repeat any of the arguments there. I also reviewed the arguments of the appellate section, and I obviously concur with the side that supports the rule. That paper is much more detailed and more well-reasoned than mine, so I'm not going to talk about that either. What I'd like to talk about is the issues of those opposing the proposed rule. So I think it's a little bit ironic that we're talking about a rule prohibiting citation of unpublished orders when, in fact, these orders are published and they are being cited to. So my argument to those opposing the proposed rule is, why are we pretending that these decisions don't exist? Because they are out there, they are being read, they are being used, whether or not they're being cited or not. And I think they're being used by the bench and the bar. In discussing the various opposition with colleagues, there's a couple of issues, as noted in the appellate section opposition paper, of why some attorneys are concerned about the use of these unpublished orders, which I'll keep saying unpublished orders, but again, we all know that they're published. One argument that has been noted is that some of these unpublished orders are not carefully drafted. And therefore, since they're not carefully drafted, or maybe the time isn't being taken to present these opinions for publication, they shouldn't be used. Well, again, my argument to that would be whether they're well drafted or not, they are being read and they are being used. So using that as an opposition is really ignoring the reality that they're being cited to some extent, but they're definitely being read and used to decide cases by judges, and they're being used in arguments by counsel. if allowing citation is going to clean up some of these orders that maybe aren't considered well-drafted, I think that's a plus. If citing inconsistent unpublished orders reconciles and makes the law more consistent, I think that's a plus. Another argument is that it's going to slow down the decision-making process. Well, I would argue that if these opinions do take more time, again, I'm not sure they need to take more time because they're being published and they're being used anyway, but if they do take more time to draft, I think in the long run, it's going to save research time by the court and by counsel. If we have more time going into these decisions, and we have better written decisions, and we have decisions that are cleaning up inconsistencies, I think that's a plus, and whatever additional time it's taking in the short term, it will eventually make better law and save time in the long run. Another argument I've heard against the proposed rule is they're going to be difficult to find. Well, I think the rule covers that by requiring that it be attached to whatever memoranda is being cited to. I also believe that once that they are citable, that more judges and more counsel will make themselves aware of these decisions, and they're going to be cited, and they're going to be used, and they won't be difficult to find. Lastly, I've heard the argument that the rule change isn't needed because one can apply to have an unpublished order published. I don't know the statistics on that. Talking to colleagues and other practitioners, I'm not aware of very many unpublished orders that have been published pursuant to the application process. So I'm not sure that that's a valid argument against the proposed rule. So in sum, my argument is we can't pretend they're not there because they are there. They are being published, they are being cited, so to formalize the rule to allow them to be cited only as persuasive authority, I think there's many more benefits than detriments. Are there any questions?
I don't have any, but I don't know about Carson City.
I have a question, Mr. Shapiro, because I'd like to key in. I know your practice is primarily in the family court, and that's only been in existence since 92. I'm assuming you would suggest that we go all the way back to the original orders that were prepared by the Supreme Court as to the family court division of the district court.
Well, that's why I respectfully disagree with Mr. Kennedy, and I would anticipate that the rule would be prospective and not retroactive.
You wouldn't want to go back and pick up some of the orders that have been done over the years by this court?
Well, I would want to, but I'm not sure that's practical.
Well, tell me why. I want to understand exactly how this is going to affect family court practitioners.
Well, I think prospective unpublished orders, the court's aware that they're going to be cited, and the court that is aware that they're going to be used as law. I think a decision made 20 years ago when the court did not anticipate that they were going to be cited, I think possibly the opinion would be written different, or the ultimate decision would be different, or there would be other considerations. So as much as I would like to be able to go back and cite family, unpublished family law orders from 20 years ago, I don't believe it's practical, and I'm not sure the court would want that either.
And you should know and tell your other practitioners that we hear the words from Ely that we're trying to do more published opinions for the family court since there's been such a dearth of them over the years, but we're going to try our best to do some more published opinions, which will help the practitioner in family court. But thank you for
your time. We look forward to that.
Okay, any other questions for all right, thank you, Mr. Shapiro. We appreciate your input
and
your written comments. Thank you very much and your input on this subject.
Is there anyone else who wants to speak to this issue? We have a number of people in the audience, but no one is indicating that they want to come forward. I think that's it.
Okay, then for the benefit of those who attended this hearing and elected not to speak, let me just say that the matter will be taken under submission. The court will deliberate on this particular issue at its conference on July 23rd. We are conducting some additional research in connection with the input we have received from various parties. And I would expect that there would be some action on this administrative docket matter in sometime in September, just for purposes of people being aware of what our schedule is. I would like to reiterate my thanks to the bar, to the appellate section, for your input and your comments, your insight. I am overwhelmingly impressed with the scholarship that has been offered on this issue. It's intriguing, and your input is very, very helpful. So thanks to all of you for attending today and for your input on this administrative docket matter.
Chief Justice,
submitted. Yes, Justice Thomas.
Would you have an additional cutoff date for any others who would wish to offer written comment?
Sure. We can provide additional comment, but in light of our schedule, any comment that is received after July 15th will not be considered. So should there be persons who wish to offer any additional remarks or written commentary, you would have till July 15th to do so. All right. Thank you very much. The matter will stand submitted, and we will move.